What years were you in SLAM, or how many years, and, like, what campaigns and projects did you work on?
So I was with SLAM starting at some point in 99, mostly, through till Yetzi Leila was 2 and SLAM kind of lost the election. I was working in the USG when that happened, so till till that point. And even afterwards, I continued to be on the personal, but, you know, I was trying to finish school and stuff. I didn't want to get too distracted.
Yeah, totally. So that was, like, 2004 when they lost the election, right?
Yeah.
What inspired you to want to participate in the puppet making for R2K? Or what was it about?
I mean, it wasn't necessarily the puppet making. It's that everybody had wanted to be in, like, one of those flying squads that are moving around for the protest. And I just thought that we needed to do a lockdown, and that was going to be much more effective in blocking and getting our point across and being much more concrete. So I really ended up kind of doing a lot of things there on my own a little bit, while most of SLAM was choosing to participate in different ways, whether it be media and those who wanted to, you know, do the direct action, wanted to do something more flexible than a lockdown, and I just thought that was really necessary.
I remember, I sort of have this memory that maybe not enough people were doing lockdowns as far
exactly.
as, like,
so, and I was like, this is really necessary, and I felt like that's where I, like, more people were needed, and I had to really advocate for more people to switch over and join me there, because I just felt, I mean, the puppet making is beautiful, and I think it, you know what I mean, it's expressively, and it's also strategically, we were hiding things inside the puppets, so it was necessary, because we wanted it to be both expressively artistic and practical at the same time.
What kind of things were, if you feel comfortable saying, like, what kind of things were hidden in the puppets?
PVC piping, in which we were supposed to be locking, chaining ourselves inside the PVC piping. So while a puppet may look like a big tree, we would actually, and our hands would be inside the tree. I don't even remember really who was with me. I remember when the puppet space got raided, I was with Alejandra outside smoking a cigarette.
So that's how you weren't arrested, right?
Yeah, I never did get arrested.
So glad. I remember seeing you outside of, I remember when we were having, like, this meeting outside of the roundhouse on, like, day 2. Everyone being locked up, and it was so intense with what was being done to people inside, and we were having a spokes council.
I remember all the spirituals. It's the first time I probably heard a lot of the Southern spirituals was outside the roundhouse while we were waiting for people to come out, whoever were going to come out. Because, you know, I didn't grow up in this country. Most of my upbringing was in a different country, and I moved here when I was 8, and even that was a very sheltered, different kind of upbringing than a lot of SLAM people. So I grew up in a white suburb and things like that. So it's different. You know what I mean? I wasn't exposed to a lot of things as a child. You know, my parents were happy I could sing in Arabic. I took the kids to the Smithsonian, to the American History Museum, and they did a whole thing about some of the songs that were sung during the Civil Rights Movement. And it was a bunch of songs that I learned during that the stuff that happened after. There's a tree song where standing by the, I can't even remember the songs now.
Oh, like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oof. Yeah, that was a scary time, and it kind of, like, reminds you that you're resolved to continue the fight, even though you're afraid, and that we're together, and we can, like, do it, like, from a place of strength and not, like, from panic.
I remember going back to go to class because I was like, well, I'm not arrested and nothing's happening for a little bit. So I went back to New York and then came back to Philly when people started being released so that people would have support when they came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that day when Chris got out, he was like the last of the slam people, and it was like a Friday, mm-hmm. and we all went for food, and there was a bunch of us there, and it just felt like we were all out.
I don't even remember, you know, like, it became a blur after a while, like, running on, like, lack of sleep, and I had class that semester, and yes, I didn't do well at all, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God, like, during the summer. Wow.
Yeah, I believe I have WS, withdrawal fails, because I never officially withdraw.
Oh, wow.
For that whole summer, so, yeah.
When they took the puppets and put them in a dumpster, it seemed like the media was able to say that we didn't have a message, that we just wanted to, you know, fuck shit up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
I feel like it's one of our probably biggest problems. We continue to have this issue. When we try to do mass protests, it's hard for the media because they want, you know, free somebody or do something, one word, one sentence, one catchphrase. And it's hard for them to understand, like, the concept of radical reform or, you know what I mean? It's just too much for them to, like, wrap their head, like, oh, well, these people are environmentalists and don't want us to kill the geese. And these, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's too much for them. And one of the things that we need to do is flush our message. You know, we continue to make this mistake. Flush our message down to something that they can understand, because they're not the smartest. You know what I mean? So, like, we think that they're going to be able to get this multi-tiered, like, you know, this whole, like, thesis on, like, how we can improve America, and they're not going to get it. Like, they're not, you know what I mean? They're not going to understand all of that.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, and that's, like, I think I learned it then. There were other protests afterwards that I'm like, it's the same shit, different day. Like, how many times are we going to try to give them this, like, we want this, you know, overall change? It's not, you can't change one system. You can't change one thing. We want you to look at things differently. We want you to understand that the world doesn't function based on these realities that you've created, you know, racial constructs and you know, class constructs and whatever. But they're not going to get it. Like, we need to dumb down our message a little bit.
The puppets are a great way to really immediately reach someone.
They were. And they were also, you know, it kind of linked a lot of things that we had going. It wasn't just, it showed a link in some way. You know, part of it is that we never actually got to see them. So it's like, we knew what was happening. Like, it was, but it wasn't. It's kind of like doing John Lennon's song. You know what I mean? Like, imagine we were making this imaginary world where we what we wanted, right? Out of puppets and whatever. And nobody got to see it, so even we didn't really get to see it. We had it in storage, so we didn't get to see them alive, moving the way they should have been seen. So, yeah, the message, of course, got taken away from us in a lot of ways.
So tragic. It upsets me even now to think about. Is it so? Basically, the puppets were mainly about the prison industrial complex and stuff. And is that like when
so
you got involved in
there was so
that,
much more than just that. There was the puppets were really. I mean, they were so. The puppets had so much going on, you know, like, I wasn't really, because I was going to be doing a lockdown, it was more the strategics and planning that than being involved in any of the puppet making, so I can't, but I do remember that we had trees that we were going to be, like, you know what I mean? And it's like, so it wasn't just focused on the prison industrial complex and whatnot. There were these, and I don't remember a lot of the puppets that were there, because I know that there was a lot happening, and you know, you just focused on what you were doing. You didn't need to worry about what everybody else was doing. And part of it was secrecy. You know, we didn't tell everybody what we were planning.
The thing I remember was, like, there was all these puppets that were skeletons from the, it was, like, more than 100 people that Bush had executed in Texas.
But you, like, I don't remember that. I remember being, like, there were going to be puppets and they were going to be somewhere, but we weren't, the way we were doing things is you worked with an Infinity group, and you weren't really supposed to share too much of what you were doing outside of your Infinity group. And our Infinity group had so much going on doing this lockdown that I didn't get to do as much, like, poking around. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. It was, I think, before that, that we had been at a protest around Shaka Sankofa in Texas, who was executed. Who was, like, a political... he was an activist, and it seemed like he was pretty clearly innocent. And I remember when he was executed, and... So we were, like, in Slam already working on that and, like, Amadou Diallo.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming into this, it was, like, very. In some ways we were working on the same issues but bringing them to a different, like, arena.
Mm-hmm. It, you know, it really was a multi-tiered, like, yeah, that's true. And there was always that and the idea of, you know, getting people of color, what I remember doing a lot of back in New York, was really trying to make sure that people of color were involved in this protest in any way that they chose how. That it wasn't, you know, this, you know, there was multi levels. You know, that's one of the things about SLAM is just because the organization is working on something, not everybody in the organization was always working on the same thing. They gave you the space to look and work around issues that you chose and you felt were important. And then also, you know, as a group, we were working on building, you know, a strong women of color voice in a lot of the different circles in New York and in Philly. So.
What was it like working with, like, non-SLAM folks and, like, a lot of white people, like, in Philly and in New York?
You know, it's interesting because the people that I remember were, of course, the people of color, because we had kind of did some meetings ourselves and things like that. And of course, I remember, of course, there were all sorts of people there, but I don't remember there being too much conflict or issues amongst different groups based on whatever. I know that there was some stuff with the media that was happening, only because I was I'm close friends with Cynthia, who was doing media for during that period in Philly. But I don't think it worked out really well.
I see. So you mean, like, there was struggles around, like, who was put forward to speak with the media and stuff?
Exactly, and issues like that. I know Peter, remember Peter? Peter did an interview on one of the channels, and it was questions about who would be put forward, who would represent the group as a whole, and how, I mean, as far as the specific conflict that happened with Cynthia, how just women of color are sometimes treated by white men in the movement. Like, she was like, my job is not to go get you coffee. Something along those lines. So I remember it being squashed pretty quickly, but I remember she just being seething about something in particular. Can't remember what the specifics were, but something along those lines.
Yeah, there was a lot. Yeah.
And we were really all, like, spread out. That was another thing. It's like, we didn't go as SLAM and stay focused as SLAM. Yeah, we spent a majority of our time with each other. We were sleeping in the same place and things like that. But, you know, I wasn't working with SLAM folks, period. I was working with some people that we had recruited in New York, people of color to come, you know what I mean? And we were working together as an Infinity group, deciding what we would do through consensus. You know, like this whole, you know, way we have to come to decisions. And it was just a totally different, I was involved and I was, you know, but it wasn't like it was just SLAM folks, or if it was you know, and then those are all the only people I saw. I saw lots of different people, and I, you know, me and Cynthia, who have been, who continue to be very close friends. I think the whole time we were there, and we were there pretty much together. I think we would see each other in the morning, and we wouldn't see each other till the evening.
Mm.
You know? She was doing something completely different than I was, so.
It's kind of amazing that Slam really leapt into this process. Like, it was right after Seattle, and it was like we were going to do the same thing on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And, like, I met a ton of new people also, like, because mm-hmm. I was doing the communications thing at this place where they were locked down on an on-ramp to a highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I met all new people, and I worked with all new people. And then when everyone was arrested, I went back and got back to, like, the people I knew the best, which was Slam folks.
Mm-hmm.
But,
exactly, and those are the people that you're worried about. You know, like when people got arrested, of course I'm concerned that everybody gets out, but I want to make sure Sandra and Chris, you know what I mean? I want to make sure my people are safe first. Not that I wanted them out first, but like, you have your own people to worry about you. I'm staying here till Sandra gets out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people were coming out and like, you know, and I was like, no, I'm not leaving till folks get out. I'm not. You know, I'm still here. And it was a little, I think people were a little, like, surprised at how close, you know what I mean, Slam was. Even at that point, we were, like, people were still there 2 weeks after.
Yeah.
You know, waiting. Just, like, waiting. Like, we had nothing to do. We were sleeping on church floors, you know? Kai was, like, instrumental in making me feel like I could do what I was planning on doing, even though I never got to do it, which is kind of the crazy thing. Is like, we really did have this great plan. And I can't remember half the details, but I remember us fighting and talking about these details 2 months in advance. You know what I mean? And every detail, where we were going, what we were going to do, how we were going to do it. Literally when they raided, we were at the last stages getting ready to leave the puppet space. We had already had cut socks and had chains around us. Literally when they came to raid, me and Alejandra are outside, and we literally had the chains on our wrists. Like, we were going to be leaving in a few minutes. And how quickly things, plans change, and how easily, you know, it's like I could have spent the whole, you know what I mean? And a lot of our friends did spend the whole protest, you know, not being active and being arrested. And then we still managed to block traffic, and people were stuck for, like, hours, beyond hours. People were stuck for an extremely long time in traffic, and people couldn't get to the convention, and you know, and we really did disrupt the convention. And the convention itself it's not like the conventions that we're having currently, where it's really centered in one place. They were really spread out across Philly. Do you remember that? If I remember correctly, and God knows it's been 10 years and I could be missing, the convention had, you know, many times the convention will be in one place, Madison Square Garden. And they'll be using the Madison Square, you know, I'm giving you an example. I don't know if it's ever been in Madison Square Garden. I believe they did one recently. I think maybe they did.
Yeah, 92.
Yeah.
The Democrats in 92.
What didn't they do? Where was the other one? The Republicans in 2004.
Oh, man, yeah.
Anyway. So, but it's like very center, like there's one space and there's many spaces within that one building, do you know what I mean? So, but this wasn't the case in Philly. They did it at an arena, but that was for the big events. The smaller events, because the arena did not have, like Madison Square Garden has that theater at Madison Square Garden, has a few different places where you could do it inside one arena. That wasn't true in Philly. So they had done a bunch of different. And the main event was whatever the arena is called. I don't even have any idea. And it wasn't in the center of town. It was off a little bit. So when we decided to do our protest, we didn't do it like in, and they had a space for us to, you know what I mean, where we could pick it if we chose, right? Of course, we paid no attention to that. And we decided we were just going to spread across the city and really bring the city to a halt. And even with the hundreds of arrests, before really the actions took place, we still managed to shut down the city for hours. You know what I mean? Hours. Like, I remember some kind of interview, and I remember us laughing hysterically because they were in, like, really angry that they had to sit in their car for, like, hours and hours. And I'm like, but that was kind of the point. Of course, again, you know, the message is, like, our purpose is not to just make sure that you understand what we're saying. Our purpose is to try to disrupt your event and to make sure that you're not going to get around us easily, you know. So, and we were extremely successful in that point.
Oh, I'm so glad, because I don't, it's like somehow that piece of it, I think I focused only on the negative, and like, I was part of this, the piece I was part of, we did shut down this on-ramp for more than 2 hours, and
it's interesting, because before anybody broke the law, people were getting arrested. So that's an interesting, like, take. We don't usually see that kind of actions, right? Usually they have to wait until we break the law before they can arrest us. But they, you know, they arrested us on conspiracy charges. And, of course, I wasn't arrested. But, you know, most people had a conspiracy charge. They did not actually have a charge of accomplishing anything, especially those who were in the puppet space. And, Susie, you're probably a lot moved by what happened in the puppet space, because for some of us, ideas of how we express ourselves is a lot more important than just, you know, locking down somewhere. The sign is as important as the protest. Sometimes the sign is more important, where you can put a sign up somewhere and you can get a lot of reaction from people. And there was no protest. It was just a sign left somewhere, you know? And for us, expression is a very important thing. But it wasn't a complete, like, let's not forget that even with what happened, even with whether or not, you know, questionable the legality of things, it doesn't change the fact that we did what we set out to do pretty good, you know? And if we had everybody who had been arrested had been able to do what they were planning on doing, I think Philly would have been a standstill for, like, the better part of a week. So, I don't see them being able to figure out all the stuff that was, you know, literally there were barrels with cement with PVC. Like, I don't imagine them getting that stuff off of us unless they, I don't know, unless people decided to unchain themselves because they needed to pee. Like, I don't see that happening within, you know, especially with the limited resources, because they were spread very thin, you know, and I'm talking about the police. They were spread thin. And they're, you know, you're talking about bringing a jackhammer in to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, or moving us, which is going to take, you know, physically moving us and putting us on a truck would be, it's going to take time. It's going to take them a long time to do that stuff. So I think we would have kept the city locked down for much longer than we did, but it still managed to be 3, 4, 5 hour delays for some folks.
Oh,
when they're going across a city that takes 25 minutes to cross.
I participated in this lockdown situation because I remember that there weren't enough people, like, for the strategy. Like, I knew it was important, and I was so jealous of flying squads because I wanted to be a flying squad.
I ended up meeting up with SLAM folks and doing the flying squad thing. And strategically, like you said, I think a lot of people want to do what's glamorous, right? And it's glamorous to be like, you know, like, we're just going to cause havoc and turn over garbage cans and, you know what I mean? And the truth is, I feel that message-wise, lockdowns are much more, strategically a better concept because it gives you time. Like, when you're a flying squad, you're moving. You don't have time to sit down. You're locked down. If a reporter comes and asks you a question, you have, you know, an arsenal of things that you could say, you know, and make your message clear that I don't feel that this country is going in the right direction with the Republican Party. And, you know, you could have made taken a minute to made that point. A flying squad comes off, you know, and in retrospect, now I'm totally against flying squads. Like, at the time, yeah, it seemed very glamorous and whatever, but I don't think it's as useful as old-fashioned civil disobedience. Lock yourself down somewhere, chain yourself to something, and you're able to sit down and have a communication with the crowd in a way that you couldn't at the flying squad. And one of the things is, like, I feel like it's like slam posts were into, like, that seemed glamorous at the time, right? And in retrospect, I mean, I remember Kai getting arrested for moving in D.C., and when she went back for the hearing, like, her message was so clear that she was supposed to get community service. The judge was like, normally I'd give you community service, but it seems like you're serving the community pretty good. The message was clear when people were doing that kind of stuff. And I think we saw Seattle, and we thought we were going to, you know what I mean, like, And part of it is that there was this, like, if have these mass protests. And but I feel that we're able to get, you know, the question is also about reform versus, you know, revolution or whatever. I mean, we're able to use our message more clearly and get some forms of reform done with more traditional means of civil disobedience. And, you know, that's a wider discussion. we can talk about maintenance words, you know, and I'm sure you'll hear from folks who disagree with me about that. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I kind of feel our communities are desperate for some maintenance work because, you know, it's not a great time in this country, and it's not a great time across the world. And we continue to spend way too much money doing things that are totally counterproductive to their purpose. Mostly I'm speaking about the wars. How do you create peace? By going to war.
You had touched on something that comes up a lot in the, like, in the interviews that I've been, you know, doing with people about SLAM, which is about mentoring. Like, when you said that Kai helped you believe in yourself that you could carry out this really intricate, daring plan, right? Can you describe, like, the way that she helped you?
Well, I was feeling like I was the only SLAM member in my Infinity group for a while, till finally people strategically made a plan to move some folks over. I remember Alejandro coming and joining my group and a couple of others, but I can't remember who else. But I was battling just, you know, kind of the traditional people of color politics, you know, people who have faith-based politics and things like that. And it's just, like, really trying to hone in our message was difficult. And I would keep going to Kai being like, I need support. And Kai would be like, we're too spread too thin. You can do this. And push me out the door. And in the end, you know, ended up being like, okay, no, now is the time where I do need people to come and kind of, like, put their foot down. I was 19 at the time. I'm a woman of color, and I would say that I had a voice, but I didn't always have my voice all the time, you know? And I still have this issue where I play, I have the Obama problem, where I'm like, together people can hold hands and sing Kumbaya and come to a consensus, right? And it's like, not necessarily, not always. And I've learned that lesson, but I still suffer. And I don't know if that's, you know, psychologically something to do with who I am, or if I think it's just I believe that people are good in general. And sometimes, you know, there are bad people. So I really do feel that people can change and people are good, and you know, it's the basis of my politics, because if I really believed in greed, then I would be a capitalist 110%, because that's the basis of capitalism. So it's like, it's the basis of my politics that I believe that people can share their wealth and come to a consensus and work together as a group to make the changes and make a better world for all of us. And in the group dynamics, you know what I mean? I had to kind of try to finesse things, and I wasn't being successful. And really, it was like, I just remember having numerous meetings with Kai, and Kai telling me, like, just go in there and say what you're saying to me. go, you know, yeah, I think it worked out. Eventually it was like, okay, she's saying that she can't finesse this, and people came and addressed what I was talking about and joined the group, because the group was also small and needed more members. So it wasn't just she needs support. But and that's, you know, the thing about SLAM is that there's a little bit of push and pull, and it was always like that. It's like, you can do it, and then, you know, the support that you're going to get isn't always going to be the support that you're saying you need, but we're going to make sure that you can do what you need to do to get things done. And with SLAM, I mean, a lot of my work was with USG and dealing with battles inside of, I was the Brookdale commissioner, so I was dealing with things that most SLAM members did not care about, and you know what I mean? But I still had kind of a student body that I had to make sure their needs and wants were answered and addressed, and learning kind of those skills from Kylie and Rochelle and Sandra on how to speak to people and how to figure out what people need and want and how to, you know, create plans. It's really like the basis of all my community organizing since, even with my own children in education. Really, before I sit down to any meeting, both of my kids, I mean, people know this, both of my kids are autistic and they have IEPs, which is federally mandated that each child with a diagnosis have a federally mandated, what is it called, individual education plan. That's what it stands for. And this is basically, if they don't follow this, they're breaking federal laws and federal guidelines. But if you don't know what to ask for, you're going to get crap on your IEP, right? And every meeting before I go in is like, what do I want? And those are the, you know, what do I want? Because those are the things that I learned before from SLAM folks. It's like, you know what you want before you go speak to somebody. You don't just show up at a meeting and let them hand you what you think. You know what I mean? And that's even with the Infinity groups. It's like, I know what I want, and I'm going to try to make sure that everybody is on the same page with me and that we come to an agreement that I can live with, but this is what I know and I want. And I, even in SLAM meetings, you know, when issues came up, and generally, yeah, everybody was on the same page. But if I had to block consensus, I'd block consensus because that's what I felt was important. And I only block consensus, I think, once or twice. But, you know, like, you have to be able to stand up and say what you need to be able to do what you can. And I think that's kind of one of the things that I learned most from that process. That was probably the time where I was like, both, you know, the support to do what I wanted to do and the point in which I'm like, no, I really need this to be able to accomplish what I want to do. And this is when, you know, people stepped in and was like, okay, we get you. You have to do it. So I think one of the things that you find that most people try to do with mentoring, and it's the mentoring, people think it's like you're going to help them, like you're going to teach, like you're going to give them a fish versus teaching them how to go fish, you know, that whole story. It's like, yeah. A lot of people feel like a mentor is going to give you that connection. It's going to get you that job or get you into to school or whatever, right? And that's not really how, you know, a good mentor works. A good mentor makes you figure out that you can do it by yourself. That you really don't need a mentor, that you're getting, you know what I mean? And it's a bouncing board, almost a therapist where you can talk out some of your ideas and concepts and whatnot. That's how a mentor should work. And that's really, I mean, Kai, Rochelle, when I dealt with my Sabrina's probably my biggest mentor till today. I'm still, you know, in regular contact with Sabrina, and we talk about everything from our families to politics to, you know, and Sabrina is probably one of those ones who really taught me how to, like, look at things differently and be objective in a different way. I was very much a Democrat when I started college, very much that, like, liberal, you know, idea, and Sabrina was like, oh no, you got to read some more. And I had a roommate who was she was an exchange student from Sweden. And she was like, here, read Noam Chomsky. and the first time I read Noam Chomsky, it's actually the second I had to read his linguistic book for a class. So, and trust me, you think his politics are hard? Don't read his like totally over my head at 18. you know, kind of opened my eyes, but Sabrine was really the one that made me look at things totally different. And she still makes me look at things totally different. She still, you know what I mean? Like, she still reminds me. People, you know, people are limited by who they are, and you can't expect real change from certain folks and things like that. Like, you know?